these particular customers then came back about a month later and walked straight up to the kitchen and said, "You are a very smart man." I said, "What's wrong?" And they said, "We can't eat pizza anywhere else. We got so used to eating your pizza that everywhere else that we went to didn't taste the same." And so that just cemented that Neapolitan pizza, you either love it from the get-go or you don't. And if you don't, you can grow into actually really understanding and loving it, but it takes a little bit of time.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Success in any field rarely, if ever, happens overnight. But what does it take to be the best? Not just great at what you do, but considered by your peers as the pinnacle of your vocation. And what impact does that have on you when you reach those lofty heights? Johnny DeFrancesco is the owner of the Grady Group, which includes 11 restaurants, 400 Grady, Zero Grady, and Grady Mercado. Johnny, how are you going?
Good, mate. How are you?
I'm good. You've won some pretty crazy accolades in your career, including the very best in the world. What's it feel like knowing that that's happened? What sort of impact has that had on you?
I think the impact mainly is self-gratification, really, because, you know, you go through your whole career, you know, doing what you love every single day and you strive to be the best and, you know, you get your ups and downs, and then to have, been able to have achieved an accolade of such sort of gives you that, you know, that self sort of confidence and understanding that, you know, your craft and all the years of your hard work has just been noticed, not only locally but around the world. And that, I think that's the hardest thing for most professionals, especially people that are genuinely passionate about what they do and what they, you know, what they're trying to achieve in their life. So, yeah, amazing achievement. You know, and I always say it wasn't only for myself, but even for the whole of Australia, you know, putting us on the map that we do know how to, you know, do things really well like anyone else.
Well, I want to have a look at some of those accolades that you have received and how that impacted everything that you do beyond that. But take us way back to when you were young. What was food like for you, and when did you first get interested in it?
So, look, my story is probably not the cliche chef story that, you know, loved food when I was a kid and that's what I wanted to do. To be honest with you, I fell into the industry because I wanted to buy myself a pair of Nike runners. And that's the absolute truth. I mean, you know, I grew up in a family where we couldn't afford things, so, you know, I had to go out and fetch these things for myself, and the only way to do it was to, you know, go out and work. And you know, I was 12 years old, went out there, got my first job in hospitality, and worked my butt off for 6 months, and bought my first you know, sneakers that I wanted to buy, you know, so that was the first taste of the industry for me. But food at home, I come from a European background. So, you know, Italian background, you can imagine the food that we're eating every day was just like what people see today as amazing was normal for us. You know, my grandmother was cooking, my mother was cooking, my father was a really good cook. So, you know, for us, it was very, very a family orientated situation. When you're at the dining at the dinner table, you are, you know, dining with conversation and, you know, enjoying the fruits of what your culture has been able to bring to the table. And so, really, food has been, you know, part of my life, like many people, you know, forever.
What led to pizza for you? What were the stepping stones that drew you to go over to Naples and learn the craft?
Look, cooking for many years, and I saw a bit of a gap in the market where, pizza was seen as fast food, or, you know, your sort of that Friday night takeaway, or, you know, that quick catch up. And I thought there's got to be more to this product. I mean, you know, I've been making it for many years, and I love the product, you know, with all my heart, to be honest with you. And I'm thinking there's got to be so much more behind what people say is a simple product. And my father was from Naples, and he passed away about 14 years ago. And I never, you know, every time I talked to him about pizza, he would always say to me, oh, the pizza's in Naples. I miss the pizza's in Naples. And I thought, I need to research this more. And I just took off and did my little tour around Naples and worked at some of the best pizzerias and learnt off some of the best people and just fell in love with it, you know, from the time or from the minute I landed in Naples and ate my first pizza.
What sort of impact did that experience have on you? What did you take away from that?
So the first time that I sat there and ate this pizza, and then the first time I went into the kitchen to you know, start making, or, you know, learning how to make Neapolitan pizza, I thought to myself, oh my God, whatever I've learned, I need to forget right now. You know, it was like I was starting from the beginning all over again. And that was pretty much the impact, was a shock to the system of, like, I thought I knew a lot. I actually know a very, very small amount about this product.
Well, tell us what those differences were. What makes a great pizza from that region?
Look, if we talk about the region, you know, there are a lot of differences. When we talk about the water, the fresh mozzarella, the tomatoes that come from San Marzano, there are so many different aspects in building this simple product. And if we talk about just the margarita, you know, people say, margarita is simple. It's actually one of the hardest pizzas to make in the world. But learning all about the way the flour reacts, the way the yeast reacts, what does the salt do? Why is the water pH levels really important? Why is the protein gluten content in the flour really important? Why is it important to mix for X amount of time and not too much longer or not less than that to get to a certain temperature of where your dough is supposed to, or a finished dough temperature. That way your dough can rise but also mature. What is the difference between maturing and what is the difference between rising? These are all the things that, you know, I learned while I was there digging really deep into all these little technical tricks. I mean, you know, a lot of people here in Australia prior to Neapolitan pizza exploding, you know, would put flour, water, yeast together and, you know, mix away and let it rise in the fridge maybe, or let it rise outside for a little bit. But we really didn't understand why we were doing certain things in certain ways and certain order as well. And you know, understanding that and getting really deep into the fundamentals of all of these little intricate little things is what makes the pizza what it is today, or what it's always been in Naples, but what it is today in Australia compared to what it was maybe 20 years ago.
You came back to Australia and you opened 400 Grady and you gained a very fast, amazing reputation as Mr. Pizza Man. What was that period of time like with that rapid growth and the attention that you were receiving?
Look, at the start, it was super difficult. I remember the first 18 months of opening, you know, we were getting very limited people in our restaurant, and the people that were coming into the restaurant, and this includes reviewers, were coming in and really not understanding the product and, you know, not giving us rave reviews or not accepting the product because they thought Italian pizza was a thin and crispy base with just a little bit of topping on there. They weren't used to, you know, that puffy edge, that softness, how Neapolitan pizza folds really easily and it's soft in your mouth, etc. So people were describing it that way, but were quite negative about it. And I would read all these comments thinking, oh my God, you've actually described the pizza the way it should actually be, but you've spoken negative about it. And this is where I then started to wonder, I wonder if it's the pizza or if it's people's palates, because we're so used to eating something completely different, and having something new takes a little bit of getting used to. So what I started doing was challenging people to come back three times for free, because I wanted them to really understand what the product should taste like. And I had a particular customer that I did this to, and you know, because I saw that they didn't eat the pizza, and I thought it's got to be another way for me to, you know, sort of translate this across on why it's such a beautiful pizza. And I said, look, come back another couple of times on me, you know, and then after that, you don't have to come back if you don't like it. And they did that. They came back three times, and I said, okay, you know, you've held your end of the bargain. I've held my end of the bargain. You don't need to come back anymore, you know? And they're like, what? And I said, well, you know, you didn't like it at the start, so you don't have to come back anymore, right? I said, we're both sort of, you know, mutually agreed from the beginning, and it's great now. So these particular customers then came back about a month later and walked straight up to the kitchen and said, you are a very smart man. And I said, what's wrong? And they said, we can't eat pizza anywhere else. We got so used to eating your pizza that everywhere else that we went to didn't taste the same. And so that just cemented that Neapolitan pizza, you either love it from the get-go or you don't. And if you don't, you can grow into actually really understanding and loving it, but it takes a little bit of time. So you've got to sort of have it more than once. You can't just eat it one time only. Yeah, so it was a really tough 18 months, to be honest, at the start. But we then expanded into another side of the restaurant. So we made it a little bit bigger. We're only 50-seater. We got into about 150-seater, a little bit more presence on the street. And people just started to come in because I got a really bad review from a prominent reviewer, which I won't mention his name. He's not around anymore, so it doesn't matter. I don't want to give him any marketing on your podcast. But he gave me a really bad review, and my phones went off the hook because they took a photo of my pizza, put it in the paper, and you know, Australians are really well traveled, right? So a lot of people had been on holidays in either Positano or Napoli or in that Campania region, and they were calling saying, the photo in the paper, is that actually how you make your pizzas? And we were like, yes. So it's Neapolitan pizza. Yes, book us a table. And that's how it all started, from that bad review.
Wow.
Yeah. So from that time on, we just kept doing what we knew how to do, and we haven't looked back. And you know, 2014 obviously came, and I competed and won the world championship, and that just cemented it. You know, sort of put the, what do they say, the nail on the coffin.
Well, what was that competition like? There were 600 chefs from 35 countries, and you did a margarita.
Really tough. You know, you've got about eight judges and they're all judging a different aspect of your ability. So your technical ability, so how technical you are, what is your understanding behind your knowledge on dough. So, you know, do you understand about the W ratings and the yeast, how that works, and the maturity and et cetera, et cetera. So they test you on that. Then they test you on your preparation, how clean you are, how you present yourself. Do you clean the oven? Is your bench clean? Is your ingredients set up really well? And then they judge you on your technique, on how you use your oven, how you cook your pizza, and also your timing has to be between 60 and 90 seconds. Once you've gone through that, then you present your pizza to a separate, you present your pizza to a separate panel of judges, where they then critique the taste, the texture, and then they drill you again on your technical ability behind you know, your dough technique, et cetera, et cetera. And then once you've done that, they put their scores together. The judges don't talk. They don't see each other. It's one of the hardest competitions in the world. or probably is the hardest.
Well, they say you can know how great a pizza maker is by their margherita. What is the secret to that?
Major secret to this is using the best ingredients possible and doing very little to it. And when I say that, we're talking buying the best mozzarella, buying the best tomato, using fresh basil, extra virgin olive oil, and then your dough. And the reason why they say you can tell a really good pizza by eating a margherita is because you can't hide behind those ingredients. Your dough is exposed, and you will be able to tell whether it's been cooked right or not, and whether it's been or whether it's gone through the right process of maturity and rising, or it hasn't. So that's why they say margherita. But I actually say that the hardest pizza to make and a really good one to judge people on is the marinara. And we're not talking about a pizza with seafood on it, right? we're talking about a pizza basically with tomato, oregano, garlic, and extra virgin olive oil.
Well, that competition must have been a lot of pressure. Describe the moment that you were declared the winner.
To be honest with you, I'm in the hall waiting, or in the room while they're doing all the nominations, and when they announced the winner of the best Neapolitan pizza in the world, and they said my name, I actually didn't hear it, because you know when you're sort of not, you're thinking, it's a great experience, but you're never going to win. I actually had a guy next to me that was from the US, and he was like punching my shoulder, like, mate, you need to get up. You just won. And I was like, what the hell's going on here? So, yeah, it was a massive surprise.
Well, with all of the amazing accolades that you have won, I think one of the most interesting ones is the best pizzeria outside of Italy, because it's not just about you and your pizza-making ability. What sort of impact has that had on you and your team?
An amazing impact. You know, the morale of the team has just gone through the roof. You know, they're part of something that we all had to play our own little part in, and it wasn't just something that depended on one person. You know, we've got a full team of in the restaurant, where the service was judged, the product was judged, the ambience was judged, you know, the whole lot. And to win the best outside of Italy, it's a beautiful feeling for all the staff. And when I say all the staff, I'm talking all the way from reception, all the way to, your kitchen hand, you know. And people say to me, why the kitchen? Well, without the kitchen hand, you're not going to get clean plates, glasses, et cetera, right? So they're a major part of our team. So, you know, as much as everyone always tries to give, you know, the praise and the awards, et cetera, to a chef, you know, behind every good chef is an awesome team. You know, it's not just about that one person. And to win this one outside of Italy, I mean, the whole team really, you know, they were, you know, blown away. They couldn't believe it.
What sort of impact has this had on you over the years, and the pressure to maintain a certain standard given such high accolades?
Look, I think, you know, and I think most people that know me really, really well, that have known me throughout my whole career, they've never seen a change in what I do. The way I've been from the time I opened, the Grady Group brand, we've always strived to do better each day, each week, each month, each year. A lot of my staff say to me, Johnny, you know, don't you think we've gotten to, a great level? And I always say, look, we can always strive to be a little bit better. And it's only the 1%. We're not talking about being, take it to another level where it's so noticeable, but every time we try and do something, just concentrate on the 1%ers. Nothing more than that. Nothing more and nothing less. And those 1%ers, over a long, long period of time, you'll find that you grow without even realizing that you're doing things in a better way. And we've been doing that forever. You know, I'm not kidding. I'm talking, we're talking about from everywhere, from the way our restaurants look, the way our service model is, the what we purchase, you know, what products we're putting in our dishes. You know, I'm crazy. I'll go to Italy when we were able to do. I was going to Italy 2-3 times a year because I was trying to find a better tomato than what I had, and I'm always doing that. You know, and it, you know, importing water to make our dough. You know, why am I doing that? It's because it's just the way I think I'm wired. I'm not going to rest and say, oh, you know what? We've hit the top. That's great. You know, and wherever it takes us, it takes us. I never think that we've ever hit the top. I always strive to be better than myself. So I'm my own biggest competition, if that makes any sense.
Well, the Grady Group is quite large now, 11 restaurants and in multiple locations and countries even. What's been the challenges of that growth and operating so many sites?
Training. You know, I invest a lot of time in training. I think trying to get people to really understand the brand as well, that it's not just a chain or a group that's just growing because they, you know, they're growing. For us, every individual site is individual. So every single restaurant has to have its own personality, has to, you know, we got to make sure that the culture is right. And that's the hardest thing. The biggest challenge for us is being able to transfer the original culture into every single location. It takes a lot of effort, takes a lot of time, but that's something that we've always strived to achieve. It's really difficult, Anthony. I mean, I think that's the most important thing in any restaurant group that's trying to grow is molding the culture and having the right people in the right positions. You know, because you can train people on how to cook your food or how to execute that and the service model, et cetera. You can do that. That's fine. I mean, there's brands around the world that have been able to do that. But I find that when people grow and expand into more than 1, 2, 3+ sites, the culture starts to become affected, not so much the product. So for me, it's been the challenge of we got to continue this culture. We got to continue, you know, making people fall in love with our brand like it's the first restaurant that we're opening.
Your restaurants and also your offering goes far beyond just pizzas. You've also got gelato, and you've also got the Italian market. Tell us about those operations and how they came about.
So Zero Gravity came about. I was in Positano. I was having a break and went into a gelateria, and I just fell in love with gelato. I mean, you know, I've always loved gelato, but while I was there, and I think it's, you know, the cliche that you're on holidays and, you know, you're sort of relaxed. And I went into this place and I saw this guy who was the owner of the gelateria, and it was the funniest episode I've ever seen. I actually went back every single day while I was there because I just wanted to keep seeing this guy do this. He would sit at his register. He was the person collecting the money. He had a microphone in his hand, and he kept singing the same song over and over and over again. It was absolute entertainment at its best. And but I just fell in love with what he was doing, and his product was outstanding. I mean, you know, this guy was making gelato and gelato cakes and pastries, etc., for, you know, kings, queens and you know, the elite of the elite around Europe. So I walked away and I thought, I need to do a gelati concept. This is too much fun. I love it. So that's what we did, and we opened up Zero Grad, and it's been a great success. We do concentrate on real artisan style gelato, you know, using amazing ingredients. I've even created my own base, so it's not a base where you can just buy off the shelf. It's something that was created by us. So it's quite unique. So we're now implementing that in, you know, in either little micro spaces or big spaces, like we've just opened up our recent one down at Crown, huge offering, beautiful space, and yeah, we're just going to continue expanding that concept, because it's just a fun concept.
What makes great gelato?
You know, it all starts off with the base, and I think it's the same fundamentals as anything. And if you break down, you know, food, it always starts off with the base ingredients of what you're using. You know, making sure that you're pasteurizing and maturing your base, you know, over a certain amount of time. That's really important, and that's what we do. We don't just churn our gelato when we're cooking our base. That has a minimum of 24-hour maturity, and then, you know, using really, really good ingredients. You know, if you're making a fruit based sorbet, which we're really, really well known for, you know, like if you ever get a chance to try our sorbet, it tastes like you're eating a gelato with like a cream based gelato, which it's not. It's a water based sorbet, but we're using really good fresh fruits, and we've also got a technique on how we churn our gelato to make it creamy. So it's not an icy sort of sorbet.
Wow!
Yeah, yeah. So these are little things that make a big difference, I say.
The last year and a half has been challenging for many on the planet, and also the hospitality sector. But during this time, you opened Grady Mercato. Tell us a bit about that.
It was about a 24-hour concept. We literally put it together within 24 hours, and I'm talking from saying we're opening a mercato to opening it. It took us 24 hours. And this was prior to lockdown. And the reason why that sort of came about was because my son has been living in Italy for 7 years, and I started seeing the trend of lockdowns there. And I said to my wife, they're going to lock us down here. And if they lock us down, no restaurant, maybe we're going to do takeaway, but we're going to have to get into something that's essential. And the only thing that I can think of is like a supermarket. So we found an old warehouse on Lygon Street, rang the agent. I said, mate, this has been for lease for about a year. Would you do a short-term lease? I want to open up a little supermarket. And he said, look, no problem. You know, I'm sure it'll be fine. And we did it, opened it. We set it all up with pallets. We had all our we had some fridges, like some drink fridges set up. We had a counter, et cetera. And we started making our own ready-made meals, you know, pre-made pizzas, et cetera. And we also had some, you know, dry pasta. We had fresh pasta. So it's sort of like a mini supermarket. And so we set that up within 24 hours, opened the doors, and lockdown then started a few days later. And it, you know, that sort of helped us get through the lockdown, to be honest with you. And from there, it was amazing how we started getting other supermarket brands come in and inquire about us producing for them. And I started thinking, this is crazy. And then I had a customer that came and bought a lasagna. And I'll never forget, I was making a pizza, and he just came over to see how I was. What are you doing? You know, are you okay? Had, you know, how are the restaurants? And, you know, we just started talking, and I said, and I was being polite. I said, what do you do? And he said, oh, you know, I'm a buyer for supermarkets, et cetera. I said, oh, yeah. And he goes, look, I love the products. Are you interested in getting your products into a few different supermarkets? And I said, that'll be great. I said, as well. He said, look, the process is long, but, you know, let me come and talk to you about it. And we sat down, and something that normally takes about eight to nine months to set up, and we're talking, you know, barcodes, all that sort of stuff that we need to do, and all the accreditations, we got it done in 4 weeks. And we are now in IGAs, Coles, a lot of independents around the country, and looking at possibly another major chain talking to us at the moment. So, so it's pretty crazy.
With the success that you've had and the incredible accolades and the influence in Australia, how have the local Italian community supported you?
They've been great. I mean, you know, I'm part of the Italian Chambers, and, you know, they've been a really good support as well. I mean, there's some great people in that Chambers as well that, you know, that love sort of celebrating the success of Australian Italians, which is great because, you know, that support factor I think is really important to any business, you know, regardless what community you're part of. You know, if you don't have your own community supporting you and backing you, I mean, it sort of becomes a little bit dark at stages. So having a bit of that support, it's actually quite nice.
I know you're a bit of a perfectionist and you're harshest critic, but what do you love about what you do?
The excitement. I love creating. I love seeing new things evolve from just a simple idea or, you know, an idea over a glass of wine, and then it ends up being something that you never thought that it would be, because you had only sort of limited expectations, and then you get this massive outcome out of this small idea. For me, that is the ticker for me. It just drives me to want to do more. I love seeing things evolve and create. That's just been me since I was a kid.
The last year and a half has been challenging, and you've had some new opportunities and opened the big new gelato place and the market as well. What are your plans? What are you looking forward to over the next couple of years?
We've got a couple of exciting things happening. I'm just about to open a really beautiful restaurant in Mornington over a couple of levels. And we've actually got all our three concepts under one roof at this one. So it's going to be the first of that type of concept. And we're just working on now. It's actually just started building. We're building a new restaurant in Mildura. So we're going out regional. Yeah.
Does that change the product that you're offering, or are you sticking to what you do with most of your establishments?
Well, the one in Mornington, we're going to be concentrating a lot more on seafood. You know, obviously we'll still have our staples and our pizza, et cetera, but we've built our kitchen a little bit different here. We're going to have beautiful Jasper where we're going to cook a lot of our food, you know, in with coal. We'll have a good bar menu so we're going to step it up a little bit more and hopefully, you know, translate that across to the other locations, just one by one.
Well, I know you explained how the margarita is so important to know if someone is an amazing pizza maker, but I can't let you go without asking what your favorite pizza is and what sort of toppings you have on it.
Look, undoubtedly my favorite pizza is a margarita. That's, you know, I just love that simplicity. But when I do get a little bit, you know, what's the word, a little bit creative, or I probably, you know, for me a little bit of salami, but you know, I'm a little bit crazy when it comes to my toppings. If I have salami on my pizza, I cut it up and I rip it really, really, really tiny little pieces all over the pizza. Yeah, I know. I don't put the salami on whole. It's just something that I've always done, and I just love it that way. So, for me, the less on a pizza, the better it is for me.
Well, I have to agree with that, Johnny, and we've loved having you on Deep in the Weeds today to hear your story. Please keep in touch, and we'll definitely have to catch up again soon.
Definitely. Thanks for that, and thanks for having us on.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we share the stories of Australia's hospo community, suppliers and producers in search of hope during this pandemic. Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen. Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast. or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au. Stay safe and be well.